Any Bonds Today, starring Henry Fonda on the transcribed program of the United States Treasury Department. By the way, have you bought
any bonds today? Any bonds today? Bonds of freedom, that's what I'm selling. Any bonds today? Scrape up the most you can. Here comes the freedom man asking you to buy a share of freedom today. Any stamps today? We'll be blessed if we all invest in the USA. Here comes the freedom man. Can't make tomorrow's plan. Not unless you buy a share of freedom today.
Some 78 years ago, an incident occurred which became one of America's milestones. An incident that is a disputed chapter in history because no one can say without contradiction when and where and how it happened. We give you our story of that incident the way we believe it may have occurred. Starring Henry Fonda with Bill Adams and John Brown, we present The Man from Cemetery Ridge, written for the Treasury Department by D.H. Johnson. Music by the Treasury Department Orchestra and Chorus. This is the 18th of November, 1863. An autumn afternoon in a peaceful valley of northern Maryland. It is a mild, still day. The smoky sun gleams low on harvest stubble and grazing herds. And there is no suggestion of the bitter strife that has raged for more than 2.5 years. No hint of the war until a bustling little locomotive thrusts the towering cone of its smokestack around a bend in the valley and chuffs importantly northward toward the hills of Pennsylvania. The cars behind it draped with flags and filled with men in the blue of the Northern Army. But not all are in uniform. Here in the last car, watching the passing gold and russet land from the windows of a private compartment, are two men in civilian garb. One is Abraham Lincoln. The other, younger man, his trusted personal aide, John Hay. Lincoln's eyes are somber, and his voice is weary as he says,
"John, I'm worried."
"The war, sir?"
"The war is more than a worry, John. This is another matter. I'm afraid I'm going to cut a mighty sorry figure up there tomorrow."
"Oh, I wouldn't say that, Mr. Lincoln."
"You're too loyal, John. I might as well face the facts. Any words of mine are going to sound mighty shoddy after Mr. Everett's speech. Have you read what he's going to say?"
"No, sir. I know he sent you a copy."
"I have it here. It's a beautiful piece of writing."
"Why not? They gave him 3 months to write it. They let you know 2 weeks ago as an afterthought, with a message to Congress to prepare a war going on."
"That doesn't matter, John. I fear I couldn't have done this well if I'd have had 2 years. Let me read you a little of this. Oration to be delivered by the Honorable Edward Everett at the dedication of a National Soldier Cemetery at Gettysburg, November..." Here's the beginning. "Overlooking these broad fields, now reposing from the labors of the waning year, the mighty Alleghenies dimly towering toward us, the graves of our brethren beneath our feet, it is with hesitation that I raise my poor voice to break the eloquent silence of God and nature..." "Now, that's magnificent oratory, John."
"I'll grant that. Mr. Everett is the greatest speaker alive. How long will he talk, sir?"
"About 2 hours, I reckon. And then they'll call on me for the dedication. I'll make some stumbling, inane remark."
"Mr. Lincoln."
"Well, that's what a lot of folks say about my speeches, John. Looks like they'll have more cause than ever hearing me after Mr. Everett."
"It doesn't matter what they say."
"But it does. Not to me. I'm thinking of some of the folks who'll be there. Mothers and fathers and wives of men who died at Gettysburg. A lot of them blame me for the war. And when they hear me, well, they'll lose what little faith they have left in the Republic. If I could only think of the right thing to say..."
"May I make a suggestion, sir?"
"Why, of course, John."
"Could you describe the battle, sir? I mean, as it might have seemed to a soldier who took part in it."
"I know very little of how battles seem to soldiers, John. And my few weeks in the Black Hawk War..."
"But you might talk to someone who was there, sir."
"Who?"
"The train's full of soldiers, Mr. Lincoln. There must be some who saw action at Gettysburg."
"Yes, yes. I reckon it might not do any harm at that.
I'll go through the train and find someone at once, sir. I'll send him in. Oh, by the way.
Yes, John?
I have a letter for you in my dispatch case in the next car. It arrived just as we left the White House. I'll bring it when I come back.
Very well, John. Yes, come in.
Private Williams reporting, sir.
Williams?
I was asked to tell you about Gettysburg, sir.
Oh, yes, of course. You were sent... Say, wait a minute. You're Tom Williams.
Yes, sir.
From Springfield.
I wasn't sure you'd remember me, sir.
Well, I might not recognize you, Tom, the way you filled out, but I certainly remember you. A few years back, you were the noisiest boy in Springfield.
Reckon I was.
The way you used to run up and down in front of my house dragging a stick against the pickets and yelling outside my law office when I was studying up on a case.
I'm mighty sorry if I used to bother you, Mr. Lincoln. I reckon I just like to make a lot of racket.
Yeah, well, most boys do, Tom. Yeah, so you were in Gettysburg, eh? I imagine you got enough racket there.
It wasn't mighty noisy, sir. Awful quiet, too.
Noisy and quiet?
Sometimes it was like being in a terrible storm with cannon for thunder and musket balls instead of rain. And sometimes it was so still you could hear your own breathing and the blood pounding in your ears.
I didn't know that.
First time it was so awful quiet was the morning of the third day. My company was behind a stone wall on Cemetery Ridge. We could see the Rebs over on the next ridge about a mile away getting ready for something. But hours and hours went by and it didn't happen. It kept getting quieter and quieter and scarier like.
Scarier?
I ain't told nobody but you, sir, but I was mighty scared.
I reckon it takes a brave man to admit that, Tom.
Then about noon, the artillery opened up and it got good and noisy again. I wasn't scared no more. Then they started their advance and the guns stopped. They couldn't fire for fear of dropping shells on their own men, and we was waiting for them to get closer. 15,000 of them marching toward us across the valley, and not a sound. I got awful scared then.
What was it, Tom? A fear of dying?
No, sir. It wasn't that scared me. It's an awful thing to say to the president of a country, sir. But you're my friend.
You can tell me, Tom.
What scared me was watching them men come on. They was marching right into death, and they knew it. But they didn't even break step. You got to have something to do that. You got to believe in something. You got to think you're right.
They're brave men, Tom. And they do believe they're right.
The thing that scared me was thinking, maybe they are right. All through that awful stillness, a thought kept getting louder and louder in my brain. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this wave of men coming on is something there's no use fighting against. Maybe what they stand for is supposed to happen.
I see.
Then the firing started, and I didn't have no more time to think for a while. And I wasn't scared no more. Then I got shot.
You were wounded?
Musket ball in the throat, sir. I fell down. Sky got kind of dark, and all the noise faded far away and stopped. It was terrible quiet then. Quieter than I ever knew it could be. But that time I wasn't scared.
Why not, Tom?
Because I figured I was dying, sir, and the whole thing come clear to me all at once like a great light. I wasn't scared no more because I knew I wasn't wrong. I realized them fellas that started this country back in 76 started something that was meant to be. It's worth fighting to keep. It's worth dying for. If the fellas that don't die take care of it after you're gone, it's got to keep on going, because it's right.
What happened then, Tom?
Oh, nothing much, sir. They come and picked me up and took me away. I've got to get back to duty, sir.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, goodbye, Tom. Been good talking to you. I'll write your mother and tell her that I saw you.
Oh, you needn't, sir. Mother knows where I am. Goodbye, Mr. Lincoln. I'll see you again.
Goodbye, Tom.
Oh, Mr. Lincoln.
Oh, yes, John.
Mr. Lincoln, I went through the whole train. There's no one aboard who saw action at Gettysburg.
What?
There's no one on the train, sir, who was in that battle.
But there must... Oh.
What was that, sir?
Oh, never mind, John. Is that the letter you mentioned?
Oh, yes, sir. It's postmarked Springfield. Shall I read it?
Yes, John.
It's from a Mrs. Williams. She says, "Dear Mr. Lincoln, as an old neighbor, I know you will share my grief at the news that has just reached me. My son, Tom, gave his life at Gettysburg, July 3rd. His company was at Cemetery Ridge."
Don't read the rest, John. I know what it is.
Very well, sir.
I was asked to tell you about Gettysburg, sir.
I think I know what I'll say tomorrow, John. The whole thing has come clear to me like a great light.
Them fellas that started this country back in 76 started something that was meant to be.
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
It's worth fighting to keep.
Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure.
It's worth dying for. If the fellas that don't die take care of it after you're gone.
We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We are met to dedicate a portion of it as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting.
We are now engaged in another war, a world war. This will be a long and a hard fight. Production of war materials must be doubled and quadrupled. What have you done to help double, let alone quadruple, output of our mines and factories so that soldiers and sailors may be supplied with weapons? How many dollars have you put into United States defense bonds? Double it. How many times have you bought them? Quadruple it. Make your bond buying a regular program. Buy as many bonds as you can today and every payday. Buy them at your bank, post office, and savings and loan association. Get defense stamps from your newspaper carrier boy and your retail dealer. Set yourself a quota, then beat it. Join your country in all-out defense against the Axis. Have you bought
any bonds today? Any bonds today? Bonds of freedom, that's what I'm selling. Any bonds today? Scrape up the most you can. Here comes the freedom man asking you to buy a share of freedom today. Any stamps today?
You've been listening to Any Bonds Today, the transcribed program of the United States Treasury Department for Defense Bonds and Stamps. Stars of this program were Henry Fonda and Barry Wood. This is Larry Elliott speaking for the Treasury Department.